welcome to season 4 of the Coffee and Geography podcast. The aim of the show is to get to know, explore, and celebrate the diverse and intersectional range of people and their love for the world. Join your host, Kit Marie Rackley, and have fun exploring all the myriad of ways guests can connect their lives to geography. Today, let's listen to being place-centered rather than time-centered, status materialism, traveling and living in the wild, busking and music, amongst other things. Got your brew ready? Great. Enjoy the listen.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Geography. And I was going to say that I'm lucky to catch this person, because she's always often doing amazing things, and I've seen her website and the amazing travels that she does and things like that. But she actually called me out and put me to rights immediately and said, Kit, we need to live the slow life. I'm not doing anything today. I'm so happy to be here. And that is Miriam Lanceford. Thank you for being here, Miriam.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so Miriam lived in for 7 years with her husband Peter in the wildernesses of New Zealand, or Aotearoa. They roamed like nomads, cooked on a fire, slept in a tent, and Miriam learned to hunt with a bow and arrow. And they lived like our hunter-gatherer ancestors. And Miriam is author of books such as Women in the Wilderness and Wild at Heart, which is why I'm so excited to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, and it's you have a partner in this. You have Peter. So what's Peter up to at the moment?
He's doing some gardening, because at the moment we are in a little cottage in the mountains of Bulgaria.
Oh,
and
wow.
So, yeah, I've been living here sort of off-grid, a little solar panel for this telephone. And, big garden, and we see hardly anyone here. Very, very peaceful and very beautiful in the springtime.
That's so, folks, this is a completely solar-powered episode on both ends of the call. That's amazing.
Oh. yeah, great.
So we got Miriam who's off grid there with a little solar panel, and I've got me with my me here at home with my solar setup and my solar batteries and all that stuff. So we are 100% renewable. Yay.
Wow, great.
So there you go, folks. It can be done. We can be done. And Miriam's all the way over there in Bulgaria, and I'm here in the east of England. So when you're off grid then, Miriam, so one of the questions I usually ask guests on here is like, what do they like to drink? Because it's called Coffee and Geography. It's like a chat over a drink. So, but when you're off on your travels, or when you want to pick me up kind of drink, what do you usually go for?
Yeah, I came prepared. I have here a big mug, an enamel mug with thyme tea. And the thyme comes from last year's summer. And I picked it and I dried it, and now we are drinking it.
Oh, that's nice. So is that from Bulgaria? Or is that from back in Holland? Or where did you grab the thyme?
Yep. No, just around here. Yeah.
That's so awesome. Yeah. So for me, folks, I've got my flask of, I'm still drinking some of the stuff that my very good friend Hermione Miao gave me, some like kind of Chinese fruit tea offerings and berries and things and just infusions. So I've got that in my mask, and it's just going straight into my partner's, my wife's clay kind of like mug that she made, and glazed mug. So when did she make it? It's got 2006 she made this.
Wow. So, beautiful. Yeah. Looks beautiful.
Yeah, it's like it suits us perfectly. Look, the lovely little cumulus clouds on it, rolling green hills and blue sky.
Yeah, that's well done.
Yeah, she's very, very creative. She's also done when she was living in Bozeman, Montana for a little while, she went and did a clay kind of like series of clay workshops, clay modeling and clay, and just made like loads of cutlery and bowls and stuff like that. And because she's got an artsy background, she did loads of fantastic glazing and stuff like that. But she's given loads of them over to friends and family, so we don't have many of them anymore. Yeah. So you're based in Bulgaria now, but you were born in, if I'm right, the Netherlands, and you did quite a bit of stint, and you met Peter out in New Zealand. And you've traveled so many places, Miriam, and you've got in touch with nature really, really deeply. So this is going to, I'm so excited to ask this question that I ask everybody, right? Oh, let's see where this goes. So what would you say, Miriam, that when you absorb all these locations and you experience all these places, how do you feel it's formed your identity as a person? Kind of, is there any particular location which has really had a strong influence or strong power on you, or have you absorbed elements of different parts of the world and this is what makes Miriam Lancewood today? I mean, I have...
Yeah, very good question. So there, my first principle is you are what you surround yourself with. So you become your environment. And if you live in a city, you become as frizzled and hyped up like everyone else. I would be too. So if I go live in a city, I first get hyperactive and then I can't sleep, then I get exhausted. And so if I go in the countryside, first I get bored, then I get through boredom and then I become calm. So it's, and I see this time and time again. And I see in myself that, this principle of I become my surroundings. And so that's why it's so important to be in a peaceful place. So, yes, my husband Peter and I have lived for 7 years in the wilderness of New Zealand. But before that and after that, we traveled a lot in Southeast Asia, even in Papua New Guinea. I traveled by myself for a year in Africa, then a year in India. And we just came from 5 months Brazil. And all these places are very, very different. And what I find interesting is that in Brazil, we were in a very humid, tropical place, super, super hot and humid. And I discovered my body doesn't like it. We came back to Bulgaria just a couple of weeks ago. And I sort of sigh with relief that, like, hey, my body knows this. That's like, this is in my blood. It's so much easier for me to be in a colder climate. Yeah, so that's interesting because it's also what Nietzsche said. He said you should live in a place that fits you and makes a world of difference. And I see that too, yeah. So some places fit people better than others, especially related to heat and humidity.
That's a really fantastic point. I mean, so one of the things that I do, Miriam, is I'm a climate change science communicator as well. And so I've done a lot about how climates are shifting and things like that. And so there's two environments I have felt exceptionally uncomfortable in. One of them is more kind of like normal climatically, and another one is abnormal climatically. And the first thing is that because my partner's from Minnesota, the twin cities in northern United States, when I went out there in wintertime, it got down to minus 25 degrees Celsius, and that is not uncommon in the middle of winter. Minus 25. My wife, she's like, yeah, it's fine. You know, wrap up. You know, yeah, cool. Don't have any exposed skin because in 30 minutes you can get frostbite, all that kind of stuff. But she was like, yeah, this is great. Look, let's go down and see the Mississippi River. Look how it's frozen over and things like that. You know, the giant Mississippi River completely covered in ice. And like, and I remember my parents coming to visit one New Year's. As soon as those doors opened at the car park at the airport, the cold hit them like a brick wall. And my dad, who was dressed up like the Michelin man, was like, just could not. And then on the other side of the coin was a couple of years ago when we had the heat wave in 2022 and it broke 40 degrees Celsius here in the United Kingdom. I start getting uncomfortable at 25 plus, you know, degrees. So yeah. I, for the first time in my own environment, I felt uncomfortable. And I felt like it wasn't suited to me. So it's interesting the way you put it that way. And I'm thinking, and now I'm thinking, folks, because folks know I talk about climate change a lot, how climate change is also maybe having a mental health impact because it's shifting our environment away from our identity, maybe. Yep. And that's a way I haven't looked at it before. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, indeed. Flexible, but some people definitely more suited towards certain climates and do not live in the, you know, in the tropics if you like to have cool, dry climate.
Exactly. And I'm just thinking that I don't think enough has been said about things like environments. And this is why I'm like a strong proponent of connecting back to indigenous knowledge and you know, that old generational, intergenerational knowledge, because that's how we thrived as human population in a more centered way, is through our connection to the environment. And mm-hmm. it's just changing in such a rapid way because of, I mean, it's almost like a double whammy, isn't it? Not only are we changing the climate, but we've also made an artificial environment around us, as you've mentioned in so many of your videos.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Peter and yeah. I often talk about philosophy, and I think the indigenous people were more place-centered, and us modern people are time-centered. And so because we are time-centered, we can live anywhere, but we're trapped in time. But the people who are place-centered cannot leave their country. Like, you never see Aborigines really outside Australia. And so they're dependent on their place, which is both a plus and a downfall, of course. But that's really interesting, because Peter and I, we try to connect to the land in New Zealand when we're living without seeing any people for 7 years in the wilderness. And we became very place-centered, very connected to the place. Oh. We did not think about other times or other countries, completely irrelevant, completely occupied with the plants, the animals, and the landscape around us.
What a fascinating insight. Oh, wow. That is a really fantastic way of looking at it. I'm going to bring forward a question I was going to ask a bit later then, because I just think that it's a fantastic segue. So for context, for people who don't know, and I know I briefly gave you the context just before we started recording, Miriam, but for people listening who don't really know, so what's happened in the United Kingdom at the moment, which in my opinion is one of the few good things that came out of COP26 a few years ago in Glasgow, the climate change talks, is that young people really had their voice heard and made a demand that more needed to be done in the education sector to connect us to our environment, to have to have real action, real youth-led responses to climate change, and that we do more strategically and systematically as well. Now, what's coming in place is something called the Climate Change and Sustainability Education Strategy, where all schools across and colleges across the United Kingdom by 2025 have to have a climate action plan and have to have a designated safeguard, a designated sustainability lead. Right, so that's the premise. So one thing they can do, of course, is work on their grounds, work on their environment, get the students and the kids and the teachers and the community more connected to their environment. So the reason why I brought this forward, Miriam, is because I love this almost, can we have this mentality shift, but from time-centered, which teachers know all about. And I know that I believe you used to teach physical education, so yeah. Probably teaching to a curriculum, you know full well the pressures on time, right?
Yeah.
So, and we know we need a culture shift in terms of dealing with environmental issues and stuff like that. So what would you say, if you could put your teacher hat back on and say, and think about for some teachers or a group of youngsters underneath your charge, how might we start to begin to instill a culture change from, say, a time-centered approach, which really is a deficit model, isn't it? Because we never have any time, to a place-centered approach where time is almost insignificant and we get more connected. Do you have any thoughts, ideas, or suggestions about how we might even begin to do that?
Yeah, from living in time to more being in time. Yeah, it would be great to have a combination of the two at least. But living in time is not only looking at the clock all the time, but also identifying with the past and constantly making plans about the future and your future. All of that is really a story, right? History and the future story. Yeah, so that is really, really complex. I have no idea how we're going to get out of our story and onto the land in this place. And live as beings instead of human doings. Maybe, first of all, we should be aware of that we are living in time and that we are, in fact, trapped in time. Yeah, try to tell kids that. I do know that it takes 7 years for a child to learn time. So it takes a long time for them to fit in this framework. So maybe we don't teach that. Then we don't have to decommission them.
Huh. Yeah, and that's the issue, isn't it? We're trying to break out such a structure based and an institutionalized way of thinking, and you know, when we talk to, and I'm sure you've experienced this yourself in the past, you know, it's like we need to change the education system. We just need to get through the crit. We don't have time, you know, and that comes up constantly. But yeah, it's a challenge. But I really love kind of that framing though about, okay, right, but let's think about what got us to this point. So whatever we're learning, whatever curriculum aspects we're learning, what brought us to here in terms of what we're learning, and where are we actually going with it? And I guess just thinking about that just for 5 or so minutes is probably a good start, I'd imagine.
Yeah. So what's the question?
Oh, that me, I just go off on thoughts, just random thoughts, Miriam, to be honest. That's my ADHD breaking. But yeah, so I guess, so let's be a bit more specific then with regards to what maybe schools can do. Say if, because you were talking about, you know, there's a lot of schools which are urban schools. They don't have much green space or things like that, but there's always.
Yeah, and how to make a change. Well, I think it starts with awareness, doesn't it? Like the air we are breathing in the cities, you know, it's completely polluted. That has so many side effects. How can we change that? The dependency on technology. But also the whole, I think we have to talk about status. So most of what people doing is for status symbols. So why does everyone has a car? Not because it's so practical, because most of the time it isn't, but because it's a status symbol. So if we change the status symbols, then we can change the culture, because everyone is after status. Well, most people, you know, more material possessions, more the latest cell phone, the latest car, all of these things.
Yeah.
Right. And that's all that ruins really our planet.
Yep. Yeah.
So symbolism is a very important one. And how many choices are we making according to those symbols?
That's pretty cool. I quite like that. So having like really common everyday items and actually getting youngsters to think, what does this actually mean? I mean, I'm the kind of person, I've never bought a brand new piece of technology for ages. I mean, this is so old now. This is, I'm flashing my iPhone. This is like 5 years out of date. I don't care. It does what it needs to do, right? My car is secondhand. I got an electric car. I don't want the brand new one. I do need to get around because the public transport here in the rural area of Norfolk is pretty poor. But I do everything I can to not use my car. Yeah, it's kind of like,
indeed. Okay, and that's what you're achieving with the podcast too, and telling people this is not an item you need and do not buy it for status. So I think it's brilliant what you're doing.
I always get told, it's like your whatever item, iPhone, whatever, is, God, look at it, it's so cracked and old. Like, why don't you get a new one? I don't need a new one. You know, it's, why do I need a new one? Yeah. The kind of thing. That's a really good start. So starting with the awareness and how things are kind of, yeah, what kind of status do they have? You know, what do we value? So when we pick up something like a phone, or we pick up something materialistic, what actually is the value we have? What is the status of that? Are we using it because we need it to call people and stay in touch? Or are we using it just because, oh, look, we're keeping up. It's a British term to say keeping up with the Joneses, which means, oh, look what the neighbours have got. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So all these items, they look so benign, but every one of them is a symbol.
Yep.
And we have to change those symbols in order to change society.
That's right. Why is everything branded? You know, exactly. So folks, so if you're a geography teacher or a history teacher, you're doing globalization. One of the things that we do, well, I did when I was a teacher, is that you looked at transnational corporations and what, and I used to do a quiz, Miriam, with my students, where I basically just put a symbol up on the board and like, right, name this. Oh, that's Honda. Oh, that's McDonald's. Oh, that's Disney. Oh, you know, and they got it in seconds.
Yeah.
In seconds. So it's less about the product, more about the brand.
That's the first thing kids learn, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's right. Symbols are sort of bypass thought and remember really easy. Yeah, that's why they're so important.
And then I
symbol
did the
of
same
money.
Thing with
money is a symbol.
Yeah. Oh yeah, crikey. And then I did the same thing with crests and flags and indigenous symbols and like Kids were like, yep. What's this? So, yeah. Yep. Right. Oh, that's brilliant.
Very powerful.
Yeah, so... Mm-hmm. Oh, it is. It's so, so powerful. So, I mentioned that on your website, you've got links to your wonderful YouTube snippets, which are absolutely brilliant. And I strongly recommend that you folks, I'll put the links in the description for Miriam's website and other things, that you check those out, because they're short, but they're really short and they're very thought provoking. So my favorite one, it's the one that you put up there quite recently, actually, Miriam, was you said that this we have this human propensity to, it's in our DNA for security, but you say that if we go for ultimate security, it's almost like an ultimate prison. And then you talked about kind of ways to kind of push up against that, like getting your hands dirty. So, yeah. So,
yeah.
So what compelled you to kind of like have that thought and then say, well, you know, we need to get out there, get out of this prison, get our hands dirty. I really love that.
Yes, indeed. And that particularly short, I took in the Himalayas where I was last summer, last September, October in India. I organized an expedition with my friend, Sophie Hilaire. And when we came to lower elevation, we didn't need a tent anymore. So we slept in the open. Ooh. And I discovered that without the tent, I could just look for hours and I felt completely safe. But a little later, and we're also around, you know, there could be bears and leopards and whatnot, and go back in the tent. The moment I have the security of the tent, I am inside. So it could also be a house, right? Right here, I'm inside a house. I've got the security. But at that very moment, I am not in touch anymore with the outside world. Mm-hmm. And so what happens? My mind gets bored. I need to look at a telephone or a book or anything. I invent a story about my future. I'm going to fantasize about my future or think back about the past, which is also just a story because I'm sure I'm not that accurate. So my mind is making these things up, another story. So the moment we have so-called security, we are living in the story that we make up. Yeah. So what is the side effect of security is that you are back in time and not in the real world. You're not in reality. You're in a time frame of the past and the future. Yeah, so one of these things I'll try to convey in 60 seconds in these shorts. Yeah, it's quite hard.
Yeah, it's so brilliant. And there are so many things that struck me when I watched that video. I was like, oh, my God. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I'm not going to get on my soapbox and go through them again because I have done so much time in the past. But so much with like current modern politics and stuff like that and whatnot. But yeah, so what I would strongly suggest people do is to use these videos as kind of thought provokers. I mean, you know, Miriam's not saying, you know, you should agree with me for that. Miriam's just putting her thoughts out there. And there's Peter on there doing some things as well. Like, he's, you know, civilization is noisy, but he talks about what he actually means by that. And
yeah.
And then I think it would work exceptionally great. Like when you get maybe youngsters in first thing in the morning when they've come in, you know, and they've dragged themselves, bless them, into school for the morning, and they're sitting there, they're having their registers done and whatnot. Is that what a lot of us, what a lot of us tend to do is that they say, right, we need to get these students ready to learn for the day, or they need to engage their brains for the day and things like that. And I just think that maybe like putting some of the, you know, putting one of your videos up for a minute and then just having a little discussion would be amazing. You know, you've got to,
yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah, I would never thought that ever happen. But yeah,
So you got Peter says civilization is noisy. What is freedom? The world is a big place. Yeah. You know, Stone Age projects. This one, as someone who's trained in meteorology and climatology, the one I really love as well was the weather has an immediate effect on our mood. Oh my goodness, yes.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And which is why we do this thing where we go, oh, it's beautiful out, it's terrible out. And which is not helpful to a climate change communicator, because when people associate warm, hot, sunny, clear weather with being great and cool, wet, damp weather as being bad, then we start to romanticize things like heat waves. And then that becomes a problem when it comes to climate change. So, but that's another story. I want you to tell me this one because I have a lot of listeners based in London and big cities. The one you did in London, I was hilarious. I loved it. So How to Survive in London. Come on, talk us through that one. It was when you were promoting your book about wilder journeys.
Yeah, so here we go back to symbols. So you'll get status by you going into the city and you buy, because that's what's expected of you. You consume. You become a consumer. You go to a cafe and you buy for £5 a cup of coffee, right, and a muffin or something. So I made a little video going into London saying how to survive here without spending so much money, because money is another symbol. Money means you spend something that is representing the time of your life. So £5 is the time of you've been working, right? And it's great if you have a good job, fantastic. Spend more and work more, good on you. But if you don't like your job and your job is suffering, then that is just a pure waste of your life, right? So £5 means something. Okay, so I went into London to promote the book Wilder Journeys, then I've co-edited with some others, Laurie King. And it was fantastic, we had a great time. So what we did is we went to the palace and we had a little guest with us and we bought the water and we made a coffee ourselves. So the whole video is about that.
Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
Right. I was like, where was this going? And it was like, it was funny because like, yeah, because like the first minute was like, oh, this is really interesting. How does Survive in London? And, you know, I've got a lot of friends. And then you pan the camera around and there was your little, cafeteria.
Stop spending so you don't have to work so much and you have more time to be.
Well, and, okay, here goes my ADHD brain again. I've just thought so. Right, folks, if what Miriam has just said is not recognisable to you because you're so living in time, like I admit I do a lot, I've got an idea about how we can make this a bit tangible for more of us, right? Okay, so I have got my big, lovely bit of fruit tea here, right? Now, how many of us in the morning, because of the lack of time, do we stick something in a flask, stick something in a tea urn, stick something in a, you know, in a metal container to keep it hot or keep it cold, right? Because we know it's going to save us time later. Yeah. Or it's nobody's going to save us money. Oh, we don't want to go to the cafe. It's like £6 for a coffee where I can take my own stuff. Well, that's what Miriam was saying in that. It's like, well, 50p, I've got my coffee. Six. Why not?
Yeah.
Do your coffee in advance, much cheaper. And then you can translate some of that time where you've got your drink already. Go out for a walk, sit under the tree, and you've got your coffee and your tea with you, and you're converting some of that time into place.
For free. Yeah. But people don't want to do it because that's not status. You don't get much status from sitting in a park like the other beggars. No, it's bad. So they don't want to do that. So they're happy to spend money on it. Yeah. So there we go again about the whole status symbol.
It's amazing how all this connects together, you know, and as geographers, you know, geography, we know there is more intersectionality and more interconnectivity than we realize. So everybody who says to me, you don't want me in your podcast, kid. Oh, no, nothing about geography. That's not the point. Oh, brilliant.
Are you a business or organization passionate about ethical practices, products, and systems? Is being sustainable, inclusive, and equitable core to your values? And do you want to spread the word amongst listeners who share these ideals? Then sponsor the Coffee and Geography podcast. There are pricing options to suit a range of needs, and you know you are supporting independent educational efforts that aligns with your aims. Visit bit.ly/coffeegeog.pod for more details.
I'm not going to let you get away with this, because the other thing that I've saw on your videos, I want you to spill the beans on this one, Miriam, is that you're not a bad musician either.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I love music. So I come from a very musical family. We always play together. On birthdays, we're expected to write a song for the person who has a birthday. We had to write some poetry at least, you know, not give presents, but, you know, do something musical and artistic. So, I very much grew up with that. And after I gave up being a teacher, I only lasted 1 year. I thought, how am I going to make a bit of money? And I thought, I do that in an enjoyable way. And I started busking in front of the supermarket. And, you know, where they put the troll went, and then you can hear me all over the car park blasting away without the amplifier. And I had such good fun and made quite good money too. People are very generous. Very interesting thing to do. And I figured out that people not only pay for the music, but they pay seems to be because of the eye contact. So if I look a person in the eye and little smile and I'll recognize their being, then they become very, very generous. Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So is it the guitar you play? Have you got any flair for any other instrument, or are you mostly a guitarist?
I grew up playing the piano. I did 6 years of piano lessons, but I'm not very good at it. My guitar is really basic. But I like the singing bit. And yeah, goes well.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'll do, folks, which I like to do sometimes. If I'll stick a little bit of that on the end of the episode for folks after the closing.
Oh, yes,
minute.
Nice. Thank you.
I like to do that. So I've had your, mm-hmm. I've got yourself now, and a couple of episodes ago, I had a climate change advocate, Dave Wynn, who picked up the harp, which was amazing. So I got a bit of his music from the harp, and then I had a singer-songwriter on last season. And so I'm going to get to a point where I'm going to have an episode just full of music, and that's going to be lovely, I think.
Yeah,
I'm going to get you on and get a track of yours on there, Miriam. That would be quite cool.
Yeah. Diversity is the key. Yeah.
Is there any particular song or music that you feel kind of connects you really strongly? I mean, or maybe not music or a song, but maybe a soundscape, you know, from your travels or something that you thought, this is really deep.
Oh, yeah, you talk about indigenous cultures. The Maoris have a flute, the Maori flute, and that's exactly like the wind or some weird, weird bird. It's really intriguing. Yes, you should look it up, the Maori flute.
The Maori flute. Oh, that's so brilliant. Yeah, there's something deep really about that, isn't there, about those kind of the ways that very kind of a very old generational indigenous music kind of like seems to amplify the natural sounds. And then to the point where you can almost not tell the difference between what is nature and what is, you know, this sound that they're making. Which is pretty, pretty awesome. What do we move on to next? Well, okay. So before we move on to the last little bit of this podcast, Miriam, is there anything in particular that you feel you kind of like really want to say, or especially since we've got a bit of a captive audience with educators and young people listening?
Yeah, well, in this whole podcast, I've been talking about the story, how humans live in time, and that we're so aware of our past, not only your own personal past, but also mankind. It's a whole story, you know?
Yeah.
And my message is, do not get sucked into the story too much. Because at first it's really enjoyable, and afterwards it gives you a lot of sorrow and stress and anxiety. So always see, this is a story, and step out of the story.
Yeah, and that aligns quite well with what we've said previously as well, is that also, you know, be careful of the single story as well. I mean, because everybody's story is different, and there's different takes on it and things like that. So I think that's a really good mantra to have.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, Mira, we're going to bring this amazing chat to a close now with one last thing. And that is, we are all geographers, where we link together all of the guests with almost like a word chain. So, and I think that you're going to do this one pretty well. So my previous podcast guest I had was Regan Mudhar, and they came up, they were given the word culture by a colleague of theirs at the Royal Meteorological Society, which was culture. So I asked Regan what they wanted to give you.
Yeah.
And they've given the word flowers.
Flowers. Right. Wow.
So for you, Miriam, you've got roughly 30 seconds. You can see that the timer on the top there, but roughly 30 seconds to just talk about flowers.
Flowers. This is the time of flowers. This is springtime. We are right now surrounded by cherry flowers. And for me, this is a symbol of spring that no one can stop. So no matter how much we change the climate, they can never stop the spring. And the flower is a symbol of this, the best one in the world.
Oh, what brilliant. Yeah, fantastic. So, yeah, and we've got, and so out in our garden at the moment, we've got beautiful blossom on our cherry tree and on our apple tree right now. And just the cherry blossom. I just love cherry blossom. It's so pretty, pink, with the pinks and spots of whites. And then, and now the bees are very happy with it, you know, and they always get to it. And the birds, they always get to those cherries before we even get a chance to. So we're like, that's okay. We can share.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Right. So for our next guest, what would you, what word would you think you would like to give for our next guest to have a go for 30 seconds?
Contemplation. I like to give the word contemplation. I'm very curious what they come up with.
Contemplation. And I always need to write down because I always tend to forget unless I listen back to the recording again. Contemplation. That's absolutely brilliant. So tune in next time, folks, to see what our following guest does with that. Oh, right. So I've already given a shout out the fact you've got a website, which is miriamlancewood.com. And I so strongly everybody check that out. Is there any other thing that you would like to promote or how people can get in touch with you if they want to touch base?
Yes, I'd like people to buy my book called Woman in the Wilderness. It's been translated into 5 languages, so pick the language you like, even Chinese. Portuguese is the last one. I promoted that in Brazil. And my sequel is called Wild at Heart. Have a look on the website for those. And, of course, Wilder Journeys, which I wrote 1 chapter for. And then my YouTube channel, which you mentioned before. And that's it. Yeah, very good.
Brilliant. Excellent. And apart from your absolutely wonderful husband, Peter, out there in the garden, is there anyone else you'd like to say hello to?
I'd like to say hello to my friend Angela Maxwell, who's going to swim the Caspian Sea.
Wow. Okay. That's not
the first
small
one in the world. Yeah. She is amazing.
Oh, good luck with that. Oh, good luck with that. And I mean, what you could do, you say, you know, your first interview or your first chat should be with Kit Marie on the Coffee and Joffrey podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
In my dreams.
Yeah.
This has been, I mean, we've talked about so much deepness and profoundness in just the space of 40 minutes. It's been so, so amazing. And I tell you what, I'm absolutely convinced that people listening to this, whether they work in education or not, are going to take some of this and go, my goodness, that's a framing I never considered before. And I think it's hopefully going to give them the chance to kind of look ahead, take stock and look to the future and take themselves out of this prison of a story, but into something, a narrative that they can write themselves.
Got it.
Maria, thank you so much for joining me.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's been such a great pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you had fun. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to the podcast and give us a rave review. Make sure you share and rate each episode, as every time you do this, it helps more people find us and continues the conversation. If you fancy being a guest or have any feedback, follow us on Twitter at @coffeegeogpod and send us a DM. Or you can email us at coffeegeogpod@geogramlings.com. Until next time, keep jogging. Come.
Yeah.